Okay. So, once again, my name is Jill Machenbacher, and I'm here on behalf of the University of Arkansas. We just heard a little bit about two of the three primary gases that are released during the cropping period in rice crops. And today I'm going to talk about the third greenhouse gas, which is carbon dioxide. So today's presentation is going to be over the long-term effects of rice crop rotation and tillage on soil surface CO2 flux. In today's presentation, I'll go over a little bit of background about the research I've been conducting and the importance of the research. I'll also cover some objectives and hypotheses related to the study, treatments used, sampling methods, data analyses, and a few key results from which I draw my conclusions. Rice is considered the most important staple food crop in the world due to its prevalence and societal longevity, and it is believed to have fed more people for a longer period of time than any other crop in the history of mankind. Globally, rice is produced on approximately 154 million hectares of land and makes up 20% of the worldwide grain production. And this is mainly produced in the Asian areas of the world, which is highlighted by the green parts of the global map. In the United States, rice is produced on 1.2 million hectares of land, which is primarily produced in the Mississippi River Delta area of the country, in the states of Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Missouri, in addition to Texas. And with also, their 17% of the production is produced in the Sacramento Valley in California. Although rice only makes a small percentage of the total cropland harvested in the U.S., it also brings in $3.4 billion in revenues annually to rice producers. And the U.S. rice makes up 11.7% of the global export market in rice. In the state of Arkansas, rice is considered the number one cash crop commodity in the state. It is produced on 0.5 million hectares of land, which makes up 48% of the total rice production area in the United States. And this produces 46% of the rice grain harvested annually in the country. Rice is unique from other crops grown in the United States due to its being grown in continuously flooded and saturated fields during most of the growing period. These saturated conditions cause a slower rate of organic matter decomposition, which leads to large amounts of organic matter stored in the soil and the associated carbon and nitrogen contents. Irrigated rice fields are unique from other wetland soils in that they are dry between crop rotations. This dry period leads to periodic aerobic conditions and a rapid breakdown of the accumulated soil organic matter. Also, this influences the carbon and nitrogen gas patterns and emission rates due to this process. One of these carbon gases that is a emitted process from the cyclic anoxic conditions of rice is carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide emissions are important because they represent 77% of the total anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions. And in addition to that, the global concentration has increased from 280 parts per million to 388 parts per million over the last 250 years. While there have been numerous carbon dioxide studies performed on agronomic crops in the U.S., these studies have been performed on dryland crops, so the periodic anaerobic conditions of rice cropping make these studies not directly applicable to rice cropping production systems. Furthermore, the carbon gas studies that have been performed on rice have been performed on paddy-grown rice in Asia. Paddy-grown rice differs from the rice production in the United States by different production differences, which include planting techniques, flooding regimes, harvesting methods, and residue management. Furthermore, climatic differences play a large role in the carbon loss due to the organic matter decomposition in the soil. Therefore, the objective of the study was to evaluate soil surface CO2 flux differences in different rice-based crop rotations that include soybean, corn, and winter wheat. Furthermore, we wanted to evaluate the differences in tillage, including conventional tillage and no tillage, over a two-year period in the Mississippi Delta region of the U.S. The hypotheses in this study included that soil CO2 respiration was going to be greater in tillage than in no-till, and this is mainly due to the increased soil manipulation and aeration caused from tillage. The next hypothesis was that the CO2 flux would be greater in rice after releasing the flood as opposed to pre-flood rice measurements. And this was mainly due to the accumulation of soil organic matter during the cropping season. The third hypothesis were that the CO2 would be greater in corn rotations than soybean rotations throughout the growing season, and this was attributed to the larger biennial inputs of organic matter from crop residues. The field treatments in this study included 10 rice-based crop rotations, which included continuous rice and 2- and 3-year rotations with soybean and corn, while 3 of the 10 rotations also included winter wheat. And as mentioned, the tillage treatments in the study included conventional tillage and no tillage. The study site was located at the Rice Research and Extension Center near Stuttgart, Arkansas, which is located in the eastern portion of the state in Arkansas, known in an area known as the Grand Prairie. The design was a randomized complete block, with each block partitioned as a strip split plot. The blocks were 120 meters long by 76 meters wide, and the 4 blocks were contained within a 1.9 hectare experimental site. Each block was divided into two tillage treatments, and then each tillage treatment was stripped across into 10 crop rotations and then split across time. In total, there were 80 plots observed during this experiment. The CO2 flux measurements were conducted every 1.5 to 3 weeks during the growing period. And this was done between the hours of 7 and 11 a.m. Central Time. The equipment used to analyze the CO2 was a LICOR 6400 portable photosynthesis system equipped with a 10-centimeter diameter CO2 flux soil chamber. In addition to CO2 flux, the 2 and 10 centimeter soil temperatures were measured using a pencil-type thermometer, and the volumetric water content in the top 6 centimeters was measured using a theta probe. The data was analyzed based on analysis of variance using the GLM procedure in SAS, and when appropriate, the means were separated using the Fisher's least significant difference at the 0.05 level. Here is a graph of the 2009 data. On this graph, the red data points represent the no-till treatments, and the blue data points represent the tilled treatments. The different crop rotations are represented by the different shapes of the data points. Furthermore, in the legend on the left-hand side, the crops that are highlighted in red are the crops that were in rotation during the 2009 year. In this data plot, there seems to be a trend in the tillage differences among several of the sampling dates. However, only the November 10th sampling date was significant in tillage differences, with the no-till being greater than the till. During the dry crop growing season, there were no differences in the corn crop in rotation versus the soybean crop in rotation. And in the May 25th sampling date, the higher rates that you see were the rotations that had winter wheat included in the rotation. In the 2010 sampling dates, there were no differences among any of the sampling dates in tillage treatments. And in the rice, which was only measured pre-flood and post-flood release because you couldn't measure the rice during the flooded period, the pre-flood had a tendency to have a higher rate of flux than the post-flood release dates. So in conclusions, the soil CO2 respiration, there was no differences in tillage treatments among the different sampling dates and across the sampling dates, with the exception of the November 2009 sampling date, which the no-till was greater than the till. Furthermore, there was not a difference in the rice pre-flood than after releasing the flood, unless the rice was double cropped with wheat. And this resulted in the pre-flood rate was greater than the post-flood rate. However, this can be explained by the fact that the pre-flood sampling measurements were taken while the wheat crop was still in the ground, as opposed to the other treatments which had no crop in the ground, and the post-flood which had no crop in the ground. And furthermore, there were no differences in the soybean and corn crop rotations during the growing season. This, therefore, it seems that after 10 and 11 years of a consistent management, and contrary to what is expected, there were really no differences in the rice-based crop rotations and tillage treatments throughout the May through November sampling dates. This is quite unique from a scientific standpoint, because one would expect very differences because of the continued organic matter input from different amounts of crop residues throughout the 10 and 11 years. However, this was not the case in this study. This leads to the belief that maybe the management practices could possibly have less of an effect on the loss of soil carbon as opposed to the storage of soil carbon. And with that, I would like to thank my co-authors, Drs. Christopher Bry, Merle Anders, and Edward Gabor, the Arkansas Rice Research and Promotion Board for funding the research, and Terry Sells and Denny McCarty for a majority of the field assistance. And with that, I can take any questions you might have.
Do we have a question for Jill?
The average, with the temperature, it was measured right outside the soil collar, which the soil collar was moved after each measurement. But so to measure the CO2 flux, we put the soil chamber on the collar that was inserted 2 centimeters in the ground, and then the soil temperature was taken right beside the collar, so to get. Right, we didn't measure it right inside the circle, but we did measure the volumetric water content after the CO2 flux chamber is moved.
So what was the time interval when you took the gas sample? I mean, like 0, 20 minutes, what
was the time interval? It varied as far as like are you talking about the length, the time of taking the CO2 flux measurement?
Yeah, sure.
Right. It varied depending on the moisture content in the soil and the warmth of the day. So the way the soil chamber works is it pumps down the CO2, and then depending on how fast the CO2 is being produced is how fast the measurement goes. So if it's a warm, semi-moist day, the measurement went really fast, and then if it was a dry, cold day... Oh, for the measurements, it was usually between the hours of 7 and 11 a.m., so it was in the morning hours to take the CO2 flux.
I think we're going to need to move on, but thank you.
Okay, thank you.